Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is going to be a fun one.
Hey, it's going to be a fantastic segment this morning. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Kate Tunison. She's the president of Presenting Plus. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome to the broadcast, Dean with Shorter University, Dr. Heath Hooper. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here, and I appreciate you guys inviting me down to talk about our university and what we've been trying to do to excel our programs.
Well, Heath, can you talk a little bit about Shorter College kind of in a big picture way? How are you serving folks?
Yeah, so Shorter University, we are a Southern Baptist university. Our motto is transforming lives through Christ. We are really Christian-oriented with our students. Our students are our priority goal. We want our students to excel in every aspect of their life. And the great thing about Shorter is we offer a lot of different programs for various types of students. We can cater to the working professional. We can cater to the freshman straight out of high school. Junior college transfer. We have a lot of programs that are both in the traditional sense and the online sense. So we're able to really reach out to a lot of these individuals. One of the main things we focus on is their growth through the program and setting them up with practical experience in terms of internship opportunities that would lead to great job opportunities for when they do finish our programs.
So now, as the dean of the business college, can you talk about your vision of what that business college experience should be from a student standpoint? Now, you said earlier you have different kind of constituencies. Some are the high school kid
yep.
that's just starting out, but you also deal with the executive that maybe is kind of
right.
working on a second act of their career, right?
Right. So I think anybody that's a part of our programs, we want them, like I said earlier, to be the best they can be in their own self. And like I said, if that's a 18-year-old coming out of high school or a 40-year-old that's established in their business, we want them to excel to the best of their ability. One great thing that we do is we push them inside and outside the classroom. We give the opportunity for all of our graduate students, undergraduate students, online students to use internship opportunity as class credit. It gives them that opportunity to put experience on a resume and to get out and make those connections. Community involvement is really big as being the dean. Rome is a very tight-knit community mm-hmm. where we are in Rome, Georgia, but we also try to reach out to Atlanta, Chattanooga, Kennesaw. Those are not far, far away from Shorter in Rome, Georgia. So any breakthrough I can be in the community to make those connections possible for our students is, you know, our primary goal.
Now, how has the college grown over the years?
Yeah, so we are actually across the street from the main campus since our College of Business is so large with our student population.
Is that the biggest college in the
it is.
The university?
It is. So we're across the street, and our graduate program has really seen the most growth. In 2014, we had about 80 students in our graduate program. This past fall, we had 160.
Wow.
And so that's across the board with our MBA program. And I can go in more detail about the MBA, but we also have our MAC program, Master of Management, and another concentration off of the Master of Management.
So people are just hungry for this more education.
Yeah, I think it's important in today's society, and it's really geared a lot towards earning the education that you want to be the successful person you can be. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it comes from. And, you know, students realize that, hey, I can go straight on after my 4-year degree, get a master's degree in 1 year. And we give the opportunity for them to, if they're starting a position, a job, they can take these courses online and finish in 1 year time.
Wow. So now, are you seeing more and more people doing online studies?
We are. Our online population has grown tremendously. That's kind of the trend in higher education now. But we do have the traditional sense. You know, we really cater a lot towards the working individual, and we have an adult professional program, which adults, learners, you know, sometimes they may be more suitable for the classroom experience. So we offer that within the graduate program. We also recruit highly within the international market. We have established articulation agreements with the school, university in India, China, and Brazil on bringing international students to Shorter to gain that, you know, American experience. And these students are also looking, they're hungry for job opportunities. So they're allowed to do the internship opportunity as well.
So now, are these people, they're coming actually to Rome, or are they doing it in India online?
These students are actually coming to Rome, Georgia.
Wow. So you're recruiting all over the world now.
We're trying to. And they actually are coming and living on campus. And a lot of these students, it's their first time in America.
Wow.
So it's just a great opportunity for us to, you know, really spread some diversity amongst the campus.
Now, how do you build this online curriculum? Is it parallel to the in-person and real-life curriculum, or is it kind of you have to build it differently because the people are going to interact differently?
Yeah, that's a super question. One of the things we try to do is make it as resemble the traditional approach as possible. You know, within an online approach, you always hear the loss in personal experience, the communication between the instructor and the student. What we really try to do is make sure we're more in line with communicating with the students rather than, you know, in a typical classroom setting. By doing that, we do video introductions of the professor. We're in the fall going to begin doing weekly seminars. So like doing a weekly question and answer with the professor, students are able to log on like a Thursday night from 7 to 7:30, ask any questions they have about the assignments. So we really try to resemble, and then the core curriculum, we try to resemble the same core concepts and the outcomes that students are going to learn on the online setting as the traditional setting.
Now, how do you build that sense of community amongst the students that happen in a classroom where I'm sitting next to somebody, whereas if I'm in my living room at night, how do I kind of hang out with the class in order to work together maybe, or to ask somebody a question? I'd rather ask my peer a question than ask the professor sometimes.
Yeah, one of the things that are required that we put in our online courses are course discussions. And we'll say, we'll ask a question relating to the course course study, and the students actually communicate via the discussion board. So they respond to each other's posts. They're able to ask questions to each other. I would like to take that into an interactive approach to where we can do like a interactive webcam or something like that, where the students actually log on, can see
each other. And they can see each other. Wow. Yeah.
That's what I would like to take.
So that's, you see, that's how it's evolving, where you're trying to create as much face-to-face time, whether it's on the screen or in person, as possible.
Yeah, we want it to be, you know, resemble the traditional approach as much as possible, because that's what students want nowadays.
Right, because that's one of the biggest benefits of college, I think, is the network you build, the people you meet, and then you hang out with it, you might become lifelong friends. And the more that you can do as the university to create that and encourage that, the better it is for everybody, I would think.
Yeah, you know, a classmate might hire the other classmates.
Exactly.
You know, two years down the road, 5 years down the road. So the networking is huge there.
And then it sounds like you're trying to put things in place to encourage that type of interaction.
We are. That's you know, one of the goals. And like I said earlier, you know, the student is our number one priority. So whatever we can do and think outside the box that other schools may not be doing, we want to try to take advantage of that.
So you're trying to be really forward thinking in this.
We are. We are.
Now, for you, where do you see opportunities for enhancement?
Well, this next year, I'm wanting to present, and I've already discussed with some constituencies and some other businesses about putting together a business professional program series. A lot of universities are going towards what they call a mini MBA. I don't want to do a mini MBA because I feel like it takes away from our actual MBA.
Right. You don't want to dilute it. Why would you want that?
Exactly. So what I'm wanting to do is I'm wanting to put together a program series that's designed for business professionals. It's a series of, we'll say, 5 days.
Okay.
And let's say in the fall, you sign up, you come for 5 different seminars. And it's a one-day seminar, catered lunch. We hold it at the College of Business. And we bring in industry professionals for half a day. And then we bring in an instructor that currently teaches the program the other half of the day. And we may talk about motivation in the workplace, practicing Christian principles, how to lead and motivate your employees, different seminars and sessions such as that. And, you know, a lot of businesses look for professional development opportunities.
Right.
And this is kind of what I'm pushing, is this is a professional development opportunity for a local business. Let's say a business wants to send 6 or 7 of their employees there. You know, first of all, they're going to get a reduced cost because they're sending a group of individuals. But the biggest thing, this is going to lead directly into the MBA program. So let's say you do all 5 sessions, you complete them all. Now you get a reduced cost into the MBA program. So I want to use it as a feeder. Mm-hmm. But I also believe there's a market out there for things like this. You know, Harvard has done this. Some other universities have done this in the mini MBA approach and have been very successful with it. So I'm kind of trying to cater it more towards a feeder rather than just the mini MBA.
Now, you mentioned the MBA program, but you also mentioned a MAC program. What is the MAC program?
So the MBA program actually has two concentrations, healthcare management and sport management. And then our MAC program is the Master of Accountancy program. And the great thing about that program is any person that's interested in being an accountant, they go take the CPA exam. They can go on and get their MAC degree in 1 year. Mm-hmm. We also try to instill that into our undergraduate accounting students. To lead directly, you know, feed directly into that MAC
right,
program.
To just knock it all out at one time rather than... Yep.
And we have a program set up to where in 5 years they can earn their undergraduate and their MAC degree.
And then sit for the CPA exam.
And then set for the CPA exam.
Wow, so then they're done.
Yep, and then that's it. They're ready to go and make six figures, right?
And they're ready to be hired because now that makes them more attractive candidate, right?
And they're going to get internship experience...
As they go through that. Now, when you're going, you keep talking about internship experience as being important. How does that happen? Is it something that the university feels that they're going out and doing outreach to businesses to say, hey, look, we have a bunch of students here that are you should consider for internships? Or do you put it on the student to go out there and meet some business folks and say, hey, you want an internship at that firm? Go make some calls.
Yeah, we encourage our students to reach out and make those connections. I try to put people in place to where it's easier for them to make the connections.
Right.
Last year, I started a business professional speaker series where I bring in 4 to 6 business professionals each semester. For example, we brought in Jimmy Collins, former CEO and president of Chick-fil-A.
He sat in your seat.
It was really, that's awesome.
Isn't he a great storyteller?
Right.
Best speaker I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously. CEO of hospitals, presidents of banks. Mm-hmm. We bring those individuals in not only to provide experience and expertise for the students, but for the student to take 5 minutes and introduce himself after the speaking opportunity and after the engagement to make that connection. So that's definitely a positive there for the student.
And where else are they going to be able to talk to in person, the Jimmy Collins?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So, you know, it's just little things like that are able to help the students.
Well, little things like that are big things.
Yeah.
Because it's that access to those quality people. It's hard to come by.
Yep.
So now for you, what's the most rewarding part of your job?
Getting to communicate with the students every day and getting to be a role model for these students. I know you can't see me, but I'm young. I'm a young individual and I'm very happy to be where I'm at. But I use that as a driving force to be in creating rapport with the students. I was in their shoes not too long ago. A lot of our students are student athletes. And so I'm able to really energize them in a way to where they can reach outside the bubble and try to be successful as possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any stories you can share about people who've gone through the program and have achieved some success?
Well, we just had a young lady in our sport management program. She was a softball player at Shorter University. And she was really torn about what she wanted to do her internship in. Mm-hmm. She decided that she would split up her internship. So for sport management, we require a 12-credit hour internship. So it's the equivalent of 4 courses, 500 work hours is what the internship consists of.
Right.
Students are given the opportunity to divide it between 6 hours and 6 hours. So this young lady worked 6 hours with the Birmingham Barons, baseball team. And then she decided that she would go outside the bubble and really try to strive for something that maybe she didn't think she could get. And so she ended up getting an internship with Action Sports Council in Australia. So this last fall, she had full expenses paid to Australia. She completed an internship with 19 other students within America. So all different universities, they took 20 students. They had them setting up events, running sport events, recruiting for those events. And so that was an outstanding opportunity for her. We've also have students that we have sport management students. That's the director of operations at the FedEx Forum for the Memphis Grizzlies. So he's in charge of concerts, the Final Four when it was there, setting up venues. We recognized a young lady last year that works the Port Authority for the FBI in New Orleans. you know? So, I mean, the range is very broad.
Well, that's what's so exciting is you don't know what the young person's interested in. It could be anything.
Yep. And she graduated with a management degree.
Right.
So
now, how did Shorter land on those kind of specialties of accounting, healthcare, and sports management?
Yeah, so the MBA program, we wanted to first introduce the MBA program because it's very important for a college of business. But with the sport management, that's what I actually teach and my expertise is in sport management. And that's a growing trend right now in the world.
What is sports management defined as?
And that's what all the parents ask me as well.
Is my kid going to be an agent? You know, is that sports management?
That's the first thing that people ask.
But it's not that, is it?
It's a very broad. Now, if you want to be a sport agent, and a lot of my freshmen come in, they say, I want to be a sport agent.
Exactly.
I said, well, get ready to go to law school because you're going to need to. But no, it's you can be an athletic director. You can be a coach. You can be an event facility. You can be a sport agent. You can, you know, it's very broad. You can be an educator. I graduated undergrad in sport management and, you know, I never thought I'd be in higher ed.
Right.
Healthcare management was really introduced because Rome has four major hospitals and it's very broad with a lot of private practices.
But they need the employees.
They do.
That's good for everybody.
Yeah. So we try to advertise it that way. We actually had the CEO of Floyd Hospital come and speak, and we've kind of teamed up with them on that approach. And then the MAC program is pretty straightforward. You know, we introduced that Master of Management. We put a nonprofit human service aspect on top of that. One of our employees, actually, Eddie Montgomery is his name. His family runs Greater Harvest out of Atlanta. It's a nonprofit organization, and they team up with Panera. So anything Panera has left over at the end of the day, they send to Greater Harvest, and Greater Harvest distributes that amongst Atlanta to some of the homeless shelters and stuff.
Wow. And that's great to see the impact that people can make in one business and nonprofits partner like that.
Yeah, it is. It's super. And I got to brag on our faculty because all of our faculty have practical experience also. We're not just educators. We have, you know, real workplace experience. And I think that's really
important. A different perspective from the student standpoint, because a lot of times a student will go to college and they'll have a professor that never worked.
Exactly.
And their perspective of business is
totally different.
Totally different.
Yeah. Unless you're out there in the real world, then you know, you got a different approach.
Exactly.
For sure.
So now what do you need more of? How can we help you?
Students. Students is the primary, you know.
Really?
We're a small private university, so we're very student-driven in everything that we do. Mm-hmm. The great thing about being a smaller private university is the one-on-one interaction we have with our students. You know, total enrollment is about 1,600 students.
Wow.
But that allows us the interaction. And as I've been talking this whole time, you know, our focus is on the student. You know, every day, doors open in our office. All the faculty have their doors open. Students can come in and out. But I think the biggest aspect is our reach out to the different type of students, whether, like I said earlier, the working professional, the adult, the young man or woman that's graduating high school. We're just able to really, you know, put that out there. I just want to grow our program to the best of its ability. And I think it starts with our students. That's our, you know, they're the recruiters.
And then the student can be, like you said, they could be 18, they could be, you know, 40, 50.
You know, we had a, I believe he was 85 graduate. He walked last year, an 85-year-old man. He was a Christian studies major. And he walked across
the stage. It was probably on a bucket list and he wanted to get it done.
Yep.
And did he go on campus or was he an online student?
He was an online student.
So online students can come down to Rome and walk.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things is we want it to be personable. You know, with our graduate program, we do a hooding ceremony the night before graduation. We invite all of our graduates in our MAC, Master Management, MBA programs. We do a nice ceremony at the College of Business, bring in a speaker also to speak at that. And then they walk the next morning.
Now, like you said, you're looking for more students. And this is a great opportunity for people in business that are thinking about maybe a second act or maybe improving their skills. They can do this program online and never set foot in Rome, right? That's a choice. Yep.
And it's only 1 year.
And 1 year you can knock it out and have an MBA.
Yep.
Good stuff. So if somebody wants to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you or learn more about the program?
So my contact information, H. Hooper. H-O-O-P-E-R at shorter.edu is my email address. Also, you can reach me on my office phone, 706-292-3906, or you can go to www.shorter.edu You can find out all of our information on our undergraduate, online, graduate, adult programs. And we're just excited. You know, I really appreciate Business Radio X and you guys having us down here today. It's just a great opportunity to reach out to new areas and new markets for what we're trying to do.
Well, it's important if people want to kind of improve their skills and get a different perspective on business. There's resources out there that can serve them, and you just got to find the right fit. So, yeah. I mean, you should definitely check out shorter.edu if you want to get involved.
Yeah, and we've been recognized across the nation. Just recently, our sport management and MBA concentration was recognized as fourth best in the country out of the top 10. And, you know, our MAC is recognized ninth. And, you know, so we have a lot of recognitions, and it's important to get those out there.
Right. Well, good stuff. Well, thank you so much for telling your story.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
All right, before we wrap, I got to hear just a little bit more about this backstory, the path to becoming the dean of the Ledbetter College of Business at Shorter University. You mentioned athletic background.
Yep.
Can you paint in some of that picture a little bit
for me? I went to Reinhardt, and I was a basketball player at Reinhardt for 4 years. Graduated in 2009 from Reinhardt. My goal was to go to University of Georgia and be in their graduate sport management program. Ended up staying and coaching at Reinhardt. And this is a funny story. That first year coaching at Reinhardt, I was not paid. I was a head JV coach, assistant varsity coach, unpaid, starting my graduate program. I worked three jobs. I was a recreation coordinator at the recreation department. I was a fourth grade competitive boys basketball coach. And here's the kicker. I was a preschool activities coordinator. So all the songs and dances and all the plays, yep, I put that on. So, you know, that was the three jobs to earn some income there. But after that first year, I was hired at Young Harris College, where I'm originally from, is Young Harris, Georgia. They just started their basketball program that year. I worked there for 2 years. And then I decided it was time for a change. 80 hours a week, you know, back in my hometown, I needed to get back out. So I applied at Shorter. I was hired as an assistant professor of sport management. So for those first 2 years, worked as just as a professor. The chair of the Department of Sport Management decided to take another position. So I went for that position and was successful in, you know, gaining the chair of the sport management department. And then 2 years later, the dean that was the current dean of the College of Business decided to take another position. And at that point in time, you know, that was my next goal. I didn't think it was going to come that quickly, but I knew that if I did not try to get that position, that I would regret it. So I put all my resources in trying to become the next dean. And I'm very thankful to Shorter and giving me the opportunity to be a dean and to try to guide our students in our college business and what's best for the Shorter University into the next steps.
So it's a conversation for another time, but I'm fascinated with what I seem to observe with regard to the impact, the influence athletics can have on a person's career path.
Yeah,
I mean, super. In your opinion, does it in fact do what I'm, I guess, suggesting, really prepare you to lead and succeed?
Absolutely. So the teamwork aspect that you gain, the leadership, the mentality, the work ethic is probably one of the most important. And that's what a lot of, you know, business professionals look for when they hire. If you're a student athlete in college, that means you dedicated 4 years of your life to that team and to the betterment of that program. So I think it's really important, and it teaches you characteristics that are outside.
And take it from me, listeners, even if you hit 190 and sat the bench almost the entire year, it can still help you.
That's right.
I know from personal experience. Okay, one more time. Best way for listeners to reach out, contact points, that kind
of thing. Yeah, the website is www.shorter.edu. My personal contact information is hhooper, H-O-O-P-E-R, at shorter.edu. Or you can give me a call, 706-292-3906.
Well, thanks so much for coming down and business with us, man. And keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me.
Hey, stay with us. We're going to have one other guest we're going to visit with.
I'm super excited to hear.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us president and owner of Presenting Plus. Please join me in welcoming to the show, Miss Kate Tunison. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Well, Kate, can you share a little bit about Presenting Plus? How do you serve folks?
Well, Presenting Plus is a presentation skills company. And I think if you ask a group of people, what is the number one fear that almost everybody in the world has.
It's being on a radio show.
Next to being on a radio show is public speaking or presentation skills. I mean, it's universal. I've asked so many groups of people that, and everybody has a fear of doing that. And so I saw it as a need. I was in corporate training, and I had to get up myself in front of groups of people to train. And so I had to sort of get over my own anxieties about it. And if you ask a lot of people, that is the number one fear. So I felt like it was a place that had a need and that I had something to offer.
Now, when you're trying to when you're trying to kind of explain what you do to people, is this something that it's too, they're too fearful to even want training?
Yes. Yeah. If you want to know the truth, there's some people who, even if it's one-on-one training, they're like,
I don't even want to think about it.
I don't even want to think about it. I can't get the words out of my mouth. And so what I try to do is help them get over those fears and gain confidence so that they can start presenting and feeling better about it.
Now, is it a confidence thing? Is it they feel that they're not good enough to be a speaker? Like, what is at the heart of the fear?
Yeah, I think nerves, first of all, and just standing up in front of a group of people or being around a table with a group of people, a lot of folks feel like they're being judged. And so it makes them feel inadequate.
So are there some little quick tips that you can share to how to just kind of maybe calm your nerves a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, recognize that anxiety is a good thing. Okay.
And that's not like unusual. Like it's not just you that's feeling this way. Like probably most people, even professional speakers probably have some anxiety.
Well, you know what I like to say is if you don't have some nerves or some anxiety before a presentation, you don't have a pulse. You know, so all you want to do is get that anxiety working for you,
right,
instead of against you. So anytime you have butterflies in your stomach, you want to get those butterflies flying in formation for you versus
just
against
chaotically.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. So recognizing that anxiety can be good. And in some of the causes of it are that we all want to do well. We all want to make a good showing. So all that's good. And if you focus on connecting with your audience versus trying to be perfect, that'll go a long way.
Right.
Okay.
I always feel that the audience doesn't know what you're going to say, so...
Exactly. Exactly.
I meant to screw up.
No. Yeah. You know, in some of my classes, I do videotaping with a very unobtrusive little webcam. And when people see themselves, they are amazed that they look as calm and collected as they do.
Right.
No one...
In their head, they're like...
Exactly.
Vibrating.
Yeah. They're vibrating. Nobody looks as nervous as they feel. So actually that can be a confidence builder. Okay.
So now when you're working to sell this in, I would think that you would have better success maybe going to the organization and saying, hey, I can train your people rather than going to the person individually. Is that how it works in your business?
Actually, I do both. All right. So I work with teams of people. It started out as a sales presentation.
Right. Like to the salespeople, like you give them some tips on how to be more effective.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, that comes from personal experience. I was in sales myself for many years and really didn't have any training on presentation skills and just kind of
figured it out on my own
and went ahead with it. So yes, approaching organizations. So I do teams, and it could be sales teams, it could be HR teams, it could be just anyone.
What about like executives and CEOs? Because they have to present a lot of time.
Absolutely. Anyone who's gotten a promotion that finds themselves in a position where they're going to have to present a lot, or if they want a promotion. Lots of times a single presentation has given someone a promotion.
Because a presentation doesn't have to be in front of 500 people. It could be in front of 10 people.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And that is it the same strategy if you're working in front of 10 people or 500 people?
Yeah, it pretty much is. You know, you want to work on, you know, how do you get in your zone, first of all? How do you get comfortable?
So you have a kind of a ritual. Is that part of it?
Yeah. A ritual or some people call it a litany. Whatever it is that calms you down.
For so me, what's yours?
Mine personally is deep breathing.
Deep breathing.
Yeah, deep breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth.
Like how many breaths? Five breaths.
I do about five. Uh-huh. You know, any more than that, I'm starting is to that
like
lightheaded.
Is that an OCD thing? Like five's a number for you?
I just found that if I do 15, I'm about
you're
to
pass out. Right.
That's all. You know, have you ever noticed how professional athletes, you know, they go to the free throw line, the basketball
right.
players,
and sometimes dribble so
they'll
many
do
times.
Dribble five times right. before they do their free throw.
Right.
And so everybody has some way of getting themselves just into their own
like
personal
centered. Right.
Centered. Exactly. Exactly.
So, now, what about, are you pro lots of coffee or against lots of coffee?
Medium coffee. Actually,
so you can overdo a good thing.
I think you can overdo a good thing. Yeah. A little caffeine helps. Right.
Now, any other things that a person should pay attention to?
Well, in terms of the controlling nerves or...
Yeah, let's get the nerves part out of the way and then we can talk about the actual presentation.
Okay. All right. So we talked about, you know, getting into your own zone. I think a lot of be audience-centered versus self-centered.
And what does that mean?
That means when you're being very nervous, you're really inside your own head.
Right.
And thinking about, you know, how you're going to come across and how you're, you know, going to be judged, so to speak. So think about connecting with your audience and what are they going to learn from you? And all of a sudden, those nerves start going away if you start connecting with them. And the other big thing I really, really like to tell people is that you have to practice. I mean, practice.
Like by yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Out loud.
Out loud. Out loud. Not in your head.
Right.
That doesn't count.
Practicing in your head does not count because it never sounds the same.
Right.
When you're practicing in your head is when you want the words to come out of your mouth.
And so, that way you can see, am I stumbling over this phrase? Maybe mm-hmm. I should change that phrase because mm-hmm. I keep, you know, saying it wrong.
Exactly. So you might, you know, when you've got 10 or 12 pairs of eyes on you, somehow the words come out of your mouth and it doesn't sound the same as when you practiced in your head. So another great way is to, everybody has a smartphone for the most part, is videotape yourself
mm-hmm.
or audio tape yourself and just listen to how you sound and then play it back. And that can be a great confidence builder as well.
Now, are there any tips to engage the audience? Like if you're having a talk, sometimes you can ask a question to the audience, you know, throw mm-hmm. them candy. Like there's lots of ways to
right? yeah,
you can bribe them with stuff.
Exactly.
Give away a prize.
Right. Well, I think getting started is one of the hardest things that you can do, right? What do I say?
How do I begin? Right.
How do I begin? So starting off with what we call a hook is mm-hmm. a great way to begin. And that can be a question. You know, you might want to frame the question by saying, you know what, I have an interesting question for you. And that gets everybody's attention.
Right.
And then you ask it. It could be a question where you're asking for engagement, which means you might want to raise your hand and people give you answers back. Or it could be a rhetorical question that mm-hmm. you answer yourself.
So you put the audience on the spot.
A little bit. You don't want them to be too uncomfortable, but it's letting them know that you're not the usual presenter, you know, starting out, well, good morning.
And
my
you're
name
just going to just
Tunison,
blurt
and,
out a bunch of stuff. And
right. So you can ask a question or you could give a startling quote
mm-hmm.
That's relevant to the topic we're
right.
going to talk about. It could be a statistic that everybody kind of takes notice of
right.
and finds interesting. And that's a great way to start a presentation in order to engage.
Now, what about slides or PowerPoint? I know a lot of people get kind of, they use it as a crutch and
yeah.
they're putting like a million words and all of a sudden the people are just reading and they're not listening anymore.
Exactly. You know, PowerPoint gets such a bad rap.
Right.
I'm a firm believer that it's not death by PowerPoint. It is death by the presenter. PowerPoint.
Right, so that's just a tool.
It's just
a
tool.
It can be used for good or for bad.
Absolutely. It's supposed to be in the background.
Right.
You are the presentation.
Right.
And it just backs you up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that old saying, a picture is worth a thousand words. So you know, have some interesting PowerPoints behind you. Maybe it's a picture that just represents what you're going to talk about.
Right.
There is a statistic that says there's 65% more recall when you use pictures and words than just words alone. Okay. So if you take some time to either do it yourself or get a professional to help you create some PowerPoint mm-hmm. slides and then learn how to use them is very crucial.
Now, what about other kind of props and special effects? Is that too distracting?
No, I don't think so. I think to break things up, you could use a short video. Mm-hmm. You could find a small, short movie. You can have other speakers. There are a lot of ways that you can, you know, break up your presentation to make it more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you're having to present to people that are higher up than you, mm-hmm. is there a different strategy doing that? If you're like, you know, like say you're middle management and now you're going up to senior management and you're going to let them know about an initiative you're working on.
Right. Yeah. So I would say just remember that executives have short attention spans mm-hmm. and that if you're someone who tends to want to go into a lot of detail, they generally don't want to
They want top level, right?
So get to the point quickly. So you need to learn how to read your audience. I actually can do an assessment in my classes that helps you determine what your own behavioral style is. And then how do you recognize the behavioral styles of other folks? And then you can realize how they want to be communicated with. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you can adjust your own communication style so that you're heard better. And so executives generally like, as you said, you know, give it to me quick, or if you get too laborious with them, they will start interrupting you. And that's what I hear a lot from students. Well, they all interrupt me with questions. I can't get to my point.
But questions are, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Maybe they are interested and you just have to come up with good answers.
Exactly.
Right? Because at the end of the day, mm-hmm. you're not presenting to present, you're presenting to communicate.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So questions are good, but if they're questioning you to cut you off because you're not moving fast enough right. for them, then you're going to need to adjust.
Exactly. Now, how do you handle these questions answers? Like you just, if they're like kind of rapid fire, then do you have to answer rapid fire or like, is there a strategy behind that?
Okay. Are we talking about still with the executives or a Q&A session at the end?
Or just in general?
Okay.
Well, maybe because each one I would imagine is different. If the executive is asking you a lot, maybe you have to kind of be parallel to them.
Exactly. So if you are presenting to executives and they do start asking you questions, you can't really say, no, wait a minute. Yeah, I'm going to get to that.
I'm getting that. Just wait
minutes.
Right there. About 20 minutes, I'm going to swing back around
That's
and
my
pay
point
that
too.
Off.
Right. No, you want to go ahead and answer it. And I would say answer it in a short manner and also say something like, I'm going to get into more detail about that in the second portion of.
Right.
And if they still want to stay around that topic, then it's
best to kind of then dive in at that point.
Stay with them.
But if you're doing a panel discussion and you have Q&A, that's a different strategy, right?
Yeah, I would say a lot of times that people don't like to do presentations because they're afraid of the questions they're going to be asked.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They might get asked a question they don't know the answer to. So.
But isn't it okay to say, look, I don't know the answer to that, but I'll get back to you.
It is. A lot of people don't want to say that, but it is perfectly okay. And I would say do your research and think about what are the top 10 questions that you right. could be asked, even if they come from left field.
Right.
And then do your homework and learn what the answers could be or get your resources in line. You know, do you have someone who can attend your presentation that's more of an expert than you are on a particular portion
of it. So that way you have a backup.
Talk
to Mary over there. She's great. Mary, why don't you answer that?
Well, here's what I suggest that you do is, first of all, you have a conversation with that person who's going to be the resource for
right.
you. So you're not
catching them.
Yeah. You're not catching them off guard and say something like, you know, when we get to the technical portion of this presentation, you know, I may turn to you and ask
right.
you a couple of questions. So, and then set them up.
Right.
Positively for
sure.
it. And I think you'll look like you're working as a team.
Now, what about the importance of stories in your presentation? Like, should your presentation be fact, or should you kind of intersperse some stories where you're kind of illustrating the point through a story?
I think stories are great. People relate to stories. Too many facts, people get bored. So if you can think of personal stories that you have or stories that you know of other folks that you feel like are interesting, practice those stories. Make sure that they hit the point. And I think that you'll find that engages your audience.
Now, if a company wanted to learn more and engage your services, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, my website is www.presentingplus.com. www.presentingplus.com.
Now, what is the pain that this organization's having where they need to call you? What spurs them to kind of engage with you?
It seems to me that a lot of people that call me have gotten a promotion where they find themselves in a position where they're going to have to present more. Or they have a big talk coming up and they might be a pretty experienced speaker, but they just want some coaching.
Right.
Help me refine the speech that I already have.
Right.
So,
now what about this skill of presenting is a skill that I'm sure Heath would agree is that young people have to learn how to do this. You can't not learn this skill, right?
Right. Exactly. It's actually a life skill. You know, it's not just for business. It's a life skill. And I like to say, you know, you can practice, you know, your speaking skills in a very non-threatening environment.
A safe environment.
A safe environment. Like if you have some volunteer work or your church or whatever, you know, volunteer to present a program or volunteer to do something so that you get practice. And then when you get into a business situation or a situation that has higher stakes involved, you're more comfortable.
Right. And more confident. Now, again, the size company that you typically work with, are these Fortune 500 companies? Are they solopreneur, professional service people? Who is your perfect audience?
Well, a lot of them are medium-sized companies that don't have a training staff internally. And I also have done some work for some Fortune 500 companies. That's mainly my background. It's where I came from, the corporate world. And then I also get a lot of calls from just solo entrepreneurs, or someone who just prefers to learn on a more private basis, a one-to-one basis, and versus being in front of other people.
Well, I'm intrigued with the whole sales and marketing aspect of your business. You've mentioned a couple of times getting calls or the reasons that people call. And is that the way it primarily works? They're finding you, or do you find yourself, in addition to having to continue to practice your craft, that you're also out there trying to sell and market and even kind of have these kind of conversations? Do you have to do that part of it too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, I do present in front of networking groups, especially, and also people will find my website too.
Right. Because it occurs to me, if you have an opportunity to sit down with an executive who wants personal coaching or wants to bring you in for their team, if you get a chance to have this kind of conversation and they really get to learn about you, I would think that the chances are pretty high you're going to have an opportunity to work with them. I'm and just then, thinking it might be kind of a crowded arena out there, you know?
Well, you know, I think it's a skill that everybody could use, actually. It's not one that everybody wants to use. They only want to use it if they've got a presentation coming up. It's amazing the number of people that contact me and they want presentation skills, and say we follow up with them later on. They said, oh, you know what? I didn't have to do that presentation, so we'll talk later. You know, it's sort of like, whoa, dodge that bullet. So, but then there are people who are very serious about it. So you're right. If I work with an executive, the chances are of them referring me throughout their company is really good.
I bet.
Good stuff. Well, once again, the website is presentingplus.com.
Yes.
And they can get a hold of you and learn about what you do and how you do it. And thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.